Astrology is a way of being in the world. It's a way of seeing the world mythically. It's a way of valuing the soul as opposed to the ego.
Beloved listeners, this is Adrienne, writer of stories and songs, witch, emergent strategist, and pleasure activist, living in the land of the Shikori, Skarura, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples, among others. This is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, of course, I'm including my co-host and sister, Autumn, who's currently on sabbatical. In her absence, I'm going full witch and just having conversations with some of my favorite witches and teachers from my whole life. When I say witch, I'm speaking about people who work with the elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. And today, the guest that I have is someone who has done that through a lot of astrology and divination. And actually, you know, you're the first person that I really started taking seriously when I was reading horoscopes. So I've got Rob Resney here, who the way I was introduced to you, and it's so sweet because while we're having this conversation, I'm gathered together with a group of women that I went to college with. And I was at college in New York City, and every week I would get the Village Voice magazine and I would turn to the back and I would be like, I need to read my free will astrology because Rob Resney is going to tell me what I need to do with my life and get myself together and be savvy and funny and all the things, right? And for years and years, you were that person. And then you've gone on and done a lot of other writing, which is really mystical and magical and fantastic. So I think of you as an astrologer who's also a writer, like both a creative writer and continuously trying to make sense of this world that we're in. And I'm so honored that you were down to come witch it up with me over here. So how are you right now today? Like, how's your body? How's your balance of self?
I feel like I'm near tears right now. So I might cry. I feel like I'm going to cry now. Because I feel like I'm so ecstatic to be communing with you because you are so much in alignment with my way of seeing the world and acting in the world. And that's always a cathartic thing. I mean, it doesn't happen very often that I'm in the presence of someone with whom I share so much of the world, of the values that I hold dear. So that's part of it. And the grief that I feel about the ongoing ecocide in the world and the loss of species. And there's more than one genocide going on in the world. There's about six or seven genocides going on in the world, you know? And so that's how my body feels right now. I have a very strong kind of sense of love and longing in my heart right now. That's the physical feeling that I have. As you know, I mean, the first instruction of the grief and the rage that we feel is that it's based on love, that we feel this way because we love so much. And I have to remember that, and I do constantly remember that.
I'm here with you, and it's been really difficult to do anything. You know, I keep saying, like, I want to either watch people who are trying to stop violence, or I want to hear from people who are trying to stop violence, or I want to be, you know, putting my body, you know, putting my reputation, what I'm like, what can I throw in the way of this harm? And this, I'm grateful to be here with my sisters because they remind me of joy. You know, they remind me like to laugh, and we hold each other tight. But I can feel the of the moment at all times, the duality
Yeah.
of the moment of like, especially this, it's been so difficult to move through this period where there's such a polarization.
Yeah.
Whenever this polarization gets so sharp, you know, and we know that we walk in a polarized world, in a world that really does believe that binaries are the only, you know, viable
Right.
shape.
Yeah.
And, but then when it happens, when something like this happens, where, you know, you try, for me, I'm just like, I've always been someone who really orients towards pacifism. I really orient towards peace.
Right.
I see the possibility of it. In nature, I'm like, there are cycles of violence, and there, and death is a part of life, and all of that's there, but there's not this hunting, this, this constant sense of unreasonable, irrational need to harm each other. And then to be trying to be a voice of intervention around that, and having people come back and be like, you're speaking hate. What you're saying is hateful. That has been a real, just heartbreaking. It's been so heartbreaking to me. And because, not because I'm like, oh, you know, it doesn't, there's been times in my life where people would come and throw a cheek at me, and I would be like, let me rethink my stance. In this moment, it makes me like, I don't know how to expand my heart even wider than I've, you know, I'm like, I have it fully just stretched to the max to try to hold this moment and try to hold dignity in this moment, and not just be screaming at people and not be making any assumptions or casting any aspersions.
Yep.
But as someone who's like, I live in the most violent country in the world, and I can't seem to stop the wound from spilling out onto the world, you know? So yeah, it's an intense time to be thinking and feeling.
Well, you just articulated beautifully what I think one of the primary perspectives of my witchery, which is to abide in the paradox and feel all the feelings, all the contradictory feelings, not assume that I need to express my opinion or that I need to correct people or educate people, but dwell in the midst of this paradox, which is really part of the glory of life. I think it's part of why it's such a privilege to be in these bodies and in this life, is to approach the ability to master this dwelling in the paradox.
Balancing. Yeah. Well, and I do think there's a, I have a, one of my teachers and friends, Alta Starr, one of the things she taught me early on, or at least, I don't know if she taught me or she asked me to find within myself. She's like, everything is all right. What if everything is all right as it is? And it disrupted my system, right? Because I'm like, but look at all the things that are not right. And she was like, and that's also true. You know, there are injustices,
right.
All these things are happening. And then there's also, what if this is the unfolding of it all? This is how it all plays out. And it makes me always also try to find the balance in each moment, right? That I'm like, even when the most horrific things are happening, what are the portals that are opening? You know, I've been particularly talking with a lot of Palestinian leaders in this time who are like, this is the most people in the world who have ever marched for us. Jewish people are marching for us all around the world. Allies, Black people, African people, folks in London, folks everywhere around the world, especially communities who have been through apartheid before. You know, to be in the Deep South, yesterday a massive action happened in North Carolina that was Jewish people blocking a highway. And there's something, you know, there's something healing that is unfolding inside of this moment, even as it is the most, I mean, for me in my lifetime, it is the most egregious thing that I've had to witness in this way. Mm-hmm. I feel like generally empire does its work, you know, off screen, or you hear about it later. But now we're so connected, you know? And so I think part of the witchy work in this, I keep trying to, inside myself and inside the collective and inside my relationship to spirit, right? I keep finding like, how am I finding a song? How am I finding a path, or how am I creating more balance within myself? Like, how can I give up? What can I give up, as part of this structure of power?
Well, and resist the urge to make everything binary, that it's
Exactly.
always either an or. You're either on this side or that side, and
Yeah.
you can't be
And you can't just be
someone
a
who
person
empathizes. Yeah, right.
with all the things. Because that's the other thing. People are like, well, where's your empathy? I'm like, I empathize across the entire spectrum, but there's also choices to make inside this spectrum. And they're choice, I'm like, I can't speak to anyone else's choices, actually. Like, what I can do is raise my voice for life. I always feel like the witchiest work is life towards life, trying to find
That's
the ways that
right.
life moves towards life, So I know that I'm using the language of witch for this season. I call this witch school. Do you call yourself a witch in the work that you do generally? Like, is that a way that you identify, or how do you call yourself?
I try to have as many job descriptors as possible, but that's certainly
Awesome.
one of them.
I love that.
I aspire to make my identity multicultural and diverse, and to not get stuck in one role. So I'm a witch, and I like to call myself Daddy Witch sometimes, because I feel like
Daddy Witch.
I'm a nurturing,
Yeah.
masculine witch who embraces feminism to the ultimate degree, and provides nurturing and inspiration for people. So there aren't a whole lot of Daddy witches around, but I'm one of them. And I'm a Kabbalist.
Yeah.
I like to say that I'm an earth adoration specialist.
Yes.
I'm about adoring the earth, and adoring this life, and adoring this body, and adoring our stories. And I've been recently been having some arguments with people who want nothing but transcendence, who denounce this body. We got to get out of this body is not you. We need to renounce our stories. The idea is to human life is all about agony, and I don't go
No,
there. I'm all
no.
about celebrating the privilege of being in this miraculous, mysterious mode that we're in. And to me,
Yeah.
that's part of my witchery, really, is the adoration of the earth, and the celebration of these bodies, and the pleasure. I like to call myself a lobbyist for the other real world, which is we might call Dreamtime, or
Yes.
that realm that's parallel and that interpenetrates our realm, because I think that's
Yes.
one of the great tragedies of our era, is how few people in Western culture have any regular consort with the other real world. They don't remember their dreams, which would be the first way to
Yeah.
do it. And that's, to me, is part of why we're in such a mess, really, because when we dwell in the other real world and draw the treasure and from the other real world, we're doing soul work, and we are better able to tune into the intelligences of all the other life forms, because we're kind of overwhelmed by materialism. We think that the human sense of intelligence is the only valid form of having an intelligence. And
Oh.
so my witch work involves not just conceptualizing animism, but trying to retrain my perceptions to perceive the world animistically, and to listen to all these other intelligences, both in this overt real world and the other real world.
This
And
other, yeah.
the other real world helps me learn how to do that in the overt real world, where I can tune into the language of animals and tune into the language of the trees,
Yes.
and I regard that as an essential part of my witchery, of my spiritual path.
That makes sense to me.
Hello, beloved survivors. This is Autumn. I'm emerging briefly from the new home I made for myself in the forest among the gnomes and the fae and magical creatures of all kind, to remind you that if you listen to this show regularly, you might consider making a gift to support our work in 2024. And I'll tell you a little bit about why. Adrienne and I and our producer, Zach, have always felt strongly that we can best protect the content of our show by being listener-supported rather than ad-sponsored. Being financially supported by the people who are most directly impacted by our show means that we can fearlessly move towards the most difficult topics, the most challenging conversations, and the most courageous edges of the time we are living through. From our apocalypse survival episode on the right to arm and defend ourselves, which aired in the midst of the 2020 uprising, to our 2023 ceasefire episode on the genocide being perpetrated on the Palestinian people in Gaza, we have maintained our show as a place to hold out visionary possibility with our eyes trained on liberation for all oppressed peoples. That's because we aren't worried about being dropped or canceled. We know that the people who most need to hear us can and will hear us, and that's because of you. So we want to thank you, all of you, who support our show in all of the myriad ways that you do it. And we want to invite those of you who haven't yet to consider making a sustaining gift via Patreon. In exchange, you do get some sweet, cute merch, plus access to content that we record only for patrons. So you can go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to learn more. And if you're wondering if I'm coming back, I'm coming back.
The idea that we are separate feels like one of the most harmful pieces to me. And I do feel so much of my witchy work is, just listening, listening until I can feel what is unseeable, or, you know, I think of it as, you know, it's like sometimes even if I get a visual, it still feels unseeable. You know, I know that I love that line from the Tao. It's like the way that it can be named is not the way. And I'm always like, oh yeah, we're talking about that ethereal space. But when did you know that you were drawn to this kind of work?
I was interested in remembering and even recording my dreams as a child. And I think I wrote down my first dream in my school notebook on the bus on the way to school when I was 9 years old. And my grandfather, my Polish grandfather, and his lineage were all great dream workers and dream specialists. And I feel like he bequeathed some of that genetically to me. And he also conversed with me about dreams all the time. It was crazy. Nobody else was interested in dreams, but he did. So I felt like that was the beginning of my attunement to the fact that we are interpenetrating this other real world that needs attention and love and care. And I feel like my long ongoing dream work, which now I've probably written down 60,000 dreams in the course of my life, and I don't interpret them all, although sometimes I do, but just to have the familiarity of that space, of living there, of abiding there and hanging out with all the denizens there and learning the laws and the language of that realm has been one of the most important developments in my life.
Beautiful. So that started when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And then when did you come across astrology, and where did that, how did that touch into the part of you that was in this balance between the dream world and here? And
I was being raised as an intellectual, probably primed to go to an Ivy League college. And I respect that aspect of me. I enjoy having a vigorous analytical intelligence, and was trained well and learned to use language specifically, but I think that I would have dried up and dissipated without the discovery of music and astrology, which happened when I was a teen. And I discovered singing and that way of expressing myself that was beyond the rational, and I discovered this mythic language, astrology, in which I wouldn't use the word archetype at that time, but that there were these higher purposes to our lives that were visible as our soul's code in this map that we could learn how to not read without absolute precision, but get a good sense of what is the big story behind each of our lives, and what's the big story behind all of our the collective lives. And so I feel like that saved my soul, music and astrology. And I was reading, Dane Rudyard was my first teacher as an astrologer. I didn't meet him personally, but he was an astrologer who put a great emphasis on not just the personality reading, which I love, but also the using astrology as a means of understanding the collective movements in history.
I love that. And that is a natural segue. The next place I was going to go is, who would you call the ancestors or the teachers in the lineage of your practices?
I feel like I've been in touch with an astral ashram. That's one term for it, since I was in the crib, since I was 6 months old. And these days I call it Feral Paradise University, and it's changed its names over a period of time. But a lot of my teammates are there, and some are spirits, some are in the physical realm. Like I regard Amanda Yates Garcia as one of my teammates, just and I don't know if she hangs out in the Feral Paradise University astral ashram. I've seen her there. So Skeleton Woman is someone I consult with every day, and Medusa is someone I consult with every day. Harriet Tubman and Arthur Rimbaud, and some people whose names are not well known, but who have been my teammates for a very long time in the spiritual realm. And I'm pretty much in conversation with them on a regular basis. And I wouldn't perform any magic, and I wouldn't even formulate an intention without consulting with them. I feel like they have proven that they're for me, they're on my side, and they're on the side of life. They've proven that over a long period of time.
I love that. And I very much identify with that. I'm like the crew. Everybody's got that crew. And whether you meet them or don't meet them, I think if you meet them and you acknowledge them and you relate to them, you actually can get so much further in this life. What are all the ways that you currently do your witchy work?
Well, the dream work is an essential part of it. The one of the
And how, and is that like something that happens when you're sleeping? Like, is it only something that happens when you're sleeping? Do you do other trance states and other work around that?
Yeah, I was going to say that next. I think one of my goals and projects over the last 10 years is to be in a chronic state of ecstatic altered awareness, to really cultivate that as a way of life. And that requires me to understand that it's not an either or. It's not like you're either tripping your brains out or in this dull routine realm of consciousness. There are a trillion states in between. They are Some are, many are yet to be discovered. They're potentially new in each moment, but they are always possible, I think. Those chronic ecstatic altered states, by instructing my perception to listen, to be aware, to be changed by those lovers that are all around me, the wind and the trees and the people in my life. And to just the part of the witchy work is to say, I want to be mildly tripping all the time. I don't microdose. I may at some point. I took acid when I was in my 20s, and I loved it, and it was great, and I think it was an important part of my spiritual development. But I haven't taken any drugs for many years, in part because one witchy magician taught me that there was some value in cultivating the ability to enter altered states under one's
Without
own power. And So I've made that a, yeah. So, and to me, to be in those altered states is essential for another one of my goals as witchy practice, which is to continually re-liberate my imagination, to just assume that I need some transgression of my own status quo on a regular basis. Yeah. And yeah. the imagination is what helps us accomplish that, and and rebel against myself and my ideas and my assumptions on a regular basis. And furthermore, to embody that and illustrate that to other people in the hope that maybe they will be inspired to liberate their imagination. And I think that that's, Diane de Prima, the poet, said that the war against the imagination is the ultimate war. All other wars are subsumed in it. And I think there's a lot to that.
I agree.
Fundamentalism doesn't like imagination. Fundamentalism doesn't.
Not at all.
Fundamentalism is afraid of the imagination, the liberated imagination. And all the war, all the wars that happen, happen because we can't imagine the lives of the others. And that's
right.
A key aspect of imagination, right?
That's right. You know, I love this. For me, I can see it in my mind that I'm like, someone's imagination gets narrow and narrow and narrow until it really functions as a blinders on their lives. That it's like, there's only one thing. There's only one way that I can live. There's only one way I can be. And I'm like, it's never true. You have 360 degrees of possibility, and your imagination can go in even more dimensions than that. And yeah, I love that. I wonder, I know astrology was such a big part of your public facing life for such a long time. Do you feel like it's still, like, is this something you're doing like every day as a part of your life now? Do you feel like it's, you just put out this gorgeous book, Astrology is Real, that I love. It's really a beautiful book. I have it sitting just like next to me in my, like in my living room, so I can have that and I can just turn to it. I love the way you write.
Thank you.
You really are, you know, I mean, I've loved how you've written since I feel like my brain met your brain at such a young age. So I've been really moved by how you write for such a long time, but I feel like reading that and Pronoia and just that you write in a way that says, this is someone who's trying to expand us beyond what a sentence even is, you know?
Well, that's part of the music in my life too. But I think that the music really informs my writing, and the sound of words is important too.
I love that. Okay. That's beautiful. And then, do you do astrology work still every day? How much does it shape your daily life?
Well, astrology is a way of being in the world, and it's mm-hmm. a way of seeing the world mythically. It's a way of valuing the soul as opposed to the ego. I don't have anything mm-hmm. against the ego. I'm not about killing the ego. I love the ego. I want it to thrive. But astrology is about dialing into our soul's code and enriching our ability to imagine new possibilities. So in that sense, mm-hmm. Astrology is so deeply a part of me that it really informs everything that I do. I don't necessarily get obsessed with analyzing everything that happens astrologically. For instance, I have never been fond of people who say that this world situation or that world situation is happening because of the aspects between Pluto and Saturn, for instance. I think that it's really difficult, to generalize for the entire world from astrological aspects. Although I say Richard Tarnas, the astrologer, does that pretty well in his book, Cosmos and Psyche. That's his specialty. So I try not to get fixated on, on astrological meanings. I want astrology to be a living, breathing, ongoing way of seeing for me, not a not some dogma that narrows my imagination in the way that you describe.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, that's good. Because I think that there's a, I also feel like I'm always looking for practices that are opening.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, this is a practice that should give you more possibility, create more possibility, not something that should narrow your sense of possibility or your sense of imagination. And like, to me, the most opening are the ones that move us into collective ideation, collaborative ideation, like dreaming the world with others. So we live, you know, the podcast is called How to Survive the End of the World. And we talk about apocalypse as a cycle that we know there's been a few rounds of the cycle. And we know, depending on where you are in society, you get to experience life much in a more apocalyptic state, a more, a sense of like constant revelation of what is and a constant state of what feel like endings or this condition has to end. And in an apocalyptic moment, I'm often wishing that people had more witchy skills for grounding themselves, for connecting. So the question I have for you is, what witchy skills do you wish everyone had and was practicing in this time?
And before I say that, let me, I'm sure you know this, the Greek word apokalyptos, or the word that we call apocalypse, has the meaning of awakening and revelation, as well as what it's come to mean in our world. So what, how can the apocalypse that we're living through, and we're in the midst of the apocalypse. It's not in the distance. It's here right now. And
no, it's here.
And so how do we not just survive in the midst of the apocalypse that we're living through, but how do we thrive in the midst of it? And what that state that you articulated so well earlier of living on the edge of the contradictions, being holding the contradictions and the paradoxes with love, with love, and with a longing for beauty too. How to find beauty in the midst of this paradox? I think that's a key life skill, and that requires us to not rely on all the thoughts we have in our head that we've had before to analyze the world. We need to be skeptical about our own beliefs and our own thoughts. Mm-hmm. I think that's a key skill for living through the apocalypse. We need to continually re-question what is true, and always assume that there's something about what we have thought before that's not true. That's a fixation of some sort. That's a pathology of some sort. So how can we outgrow it?
Okay. I like that. I feel myself expanding as I listen to you.
Well, and curiosity.
Curiosity
is a key skill in living through the apocalypse. And that goes along with what we're just saying, is assume that you may not know what's true and what's right in this situation, that you have a lot to learn. I have a lot to learn. And the way to learn it, to me, one of my teachers, Kabbalistic teachers, said, if you want to know the truth about anything, you have to love it. If you want to know the truth about a person, about a dog, about a tree, you have to love it, because if you don't set up that empathetic connection with the other intelligence, its nature won't be wholly visible to you. So.
I love that. I love that. So one witchy practice then is truly cultivating love.
Absolutely.
Yourself,
to me, that's the main
the
one.
For the other, for,
How can I enhance the how can I enhance my visceral sense of the interconnectedness of all things? Not just the idea. The idea is great. That comes with it. But how can I feel in my heart, in my gut, in my crotch, in my head, how can I feel the love for all of us together? And how can I tune into the way that we're all connected?
Yeah.
And that's an emotional thing. That's a feeling thing.
I love that. I love that. I really love that. And Yeah, we're so interconnected in this work. You know, I really feel like that's the thing that I keep trying to awaken for people too, is I also think it helps us to prioritize in a way, like, oh, that love work. Like, I can tell when I am feeling despair and complete overwhelm that I'm outside of myself. It's like I'm trying to reach beyond the precipices of my love or what my heart can do. And if I bring it back in and I'm like, how do I love, you know, how do I love my whole family? And how can I make sure that within my family, we can be loving with each other, even with different opinions, different opinions on things. And can we love each other to see things more clearly? And can we love each other there? Can I love my family? Can I love my community? Can I, you know, I really am like, there's certain individuals and I'll just kind of tune in and be like, I don't have to love everybody at all times. Sometimes that's hard, but who can I love that's in front of me? Who can I love that's challenging me? How can I see the challenge that they're bringing me as rooted in something that is love within them?
Beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's a right here, right now consciousness.
It's very present.
Rather than being that overwhelm, which I completely understand, you know, bringing it down to what can I do right now to cultivate my love for this situation, this person, this moment.
Yeah, that's right. So the final like formal question I have for you is I'm in a big moment of healing. I can feel a massive shift within me. A lot of it is presenting as being around disordered eating, but really it's about satisfiability and enoughness and really like just being able to feel what it is to trust the abundant world, right? That it has enough for me and that I am enough for the world. And it's been really big healing work. And I've still continued my witch work. Spells keep pouring through me. Songs keep pouring through me. And I'm really feeling the skill that I have to offer what I'm offering while doing the work that I'm doing. It's growing a lot. I'm more conscious of it than I have been. And I was going to ask you, I've been asking all of the witches, like, how do you navigate doing the witch work you're doing while continuing your own healing?
So that's such a primal question that really deserves to be revisited on a regular basis for all of us. I feel I have the assumption that the gifts that I have to offer the world and the work that I do on myself are intimately and intricately connected. To do one is to do the other. They can't happen separately. And it's that Andrew Harvey's idea of sacred activism, which is it's not enough just to go out there and protest and march and do community work, although that's fantastic, but you also have to do the inner transformative work to ensure that you are an embodiment of the values that you would like to instill in the world. And so I'm always about that work. And I'd like to know more, actually. I don't know if we have enough time. I'd like to know more about what you're going through. But for me, it's the longing that so much of my longing feels erotic, not necessarily sometimes in a personal way, but sometimes it seems like, just leave me alone, longing. Just leave me alone. It's too much. I can't bear this, this much yearning. And on other occasions, it seems like, but this is what drives my creativity. This is what drives my longing to serve other people and to be a force of inspiration in the world. So I don't want to repress the yearning. I don't want it to tell it to go away and leave me alone.
That's right.
So that's kind of right where I am at this moment.
But yeah,
it sounds like it has similarities to what you might
absolutely
be.
You know, I've really I think in my lifetime I've done so much healing. I've felt so many things shift in my lifetime, and I feel so grateful for that. Like, I've been really you know, the universe placed me in the right family for where my soul is right now. Like I can really feel that. And I can feel inside of that healing, the deeper wound that comes from displacement, right? That's like, oh, like, I think all people are supposed to have a visceral relationship to the land. And being displaced in the way that I was and growing up, moving all around, which means that I love the whole earth. And so I want to be plugged into the whole thing. You know, I feel most at ease and at comfort in the ocean when I'm just like, okay, now I'm in you. And I want to be in and of the world. And I love the erotic aspect of it, because it is true that I never have a doubt that I'm loved by the earth, and that the earth wants me, and that the earth is grateful to hold whatever I bring to her. She wants to hear all of my stories. She wants to catch all of my tears. You know, she is such a constant and supportive partner for my life. But I feel like it's taken me most of my life to really drop into that. And then it's reshaping my work in the world, because I feel like I'm trusting the impulses that come from below my neck, the impulses that come from my heart and my pelvic bowl and like my root system, you know, that are just like, you know, your life is about much, much more than you, but it always happens through the container that is you. And that's, you know, all you have to do is just feel which way are you supposed to go now. You know, I have people now who are like, I can feel a lot of people saying thank you, or, you know, I love how you're showing up in the world. And then I can feel other people, you know, just being like, I have a strong critique about how you're showing up in the world. And it's really beautiful to be able to just sit with that. It's okay. Right. I'm like, it's okay. You know, I'm like, I'm learning that it's okay if other people are uncomfortable, as long as I know that whatever bell I'm ringing is reverberating from my root system. Uh-huh. Right. And I'm like, I don't know all the answers. Like if I go up through my head, I don't know the answers. You know, I don't know how we get to peace. I don't know how we find harmony. I don't know it up in my mind, but I do know that I have sung my way into that experience with other people, and I have made love into that experience with other people. And I have been in healing circles, and I have been in communities and actions where I felt this other way, this other possibility. And I definitely feel it in the ethereal and the dream realm. So yeah, I think a lot of it feels very similar, right? That there's this huge thing that's constantly pulling me into my work, my aliveness, my not doneness. And I have the blessing. I had an elder, I talk about her, Grace Lee Boggs. I got to see her reach the end of a long life and say, I'm good. I'm done. That's enough. I don't have any more thoughts. I don't need to write any more books, you know? And I'm like, I'm also hungry for that experience. I hope, inshallah, I hope that that's the life that I get to live, is one in which I'm not, you know, unsatisfied by how it ends. And that's actually the big wish that I have for everyone, right? Uh-huh. You know, I don't know that we ever get enough of the people we love, but I do think we can find satisfaction in the lives we live. And
beautiful.
That's, you know, so I'm the intimate practice ground for that.
Well, you offer that so well. I am so nourished by your work in the world. It's hard for me to imagine that anybody doesn't like the way you show up, you know, for me, because
it's beautiful, because I feel like a living embodiment of love, right? Like what's happening inside me at all times feels like love. So that's helpful, because then when people do show up and they're like, well, why are you like this? This past month has been really fascinating for me, because I've had a lot of people being like, I trust everything you do. I love everything you do, except right now I don't like you. Uh-huh. Right? And so
that's nice.
For me, I'm like, it's okay, because I have to say, I think with time, maybe you'll see this moment differently. Uh-huh. And maybe I'll see this moment differently too. Like I always allow the fact that I might be out of alignment. You know, I might not be acting from the ground. I think in times like this, whenever there's conflict moving in the world, and when there's these forces that feel out of control in their hunger for violence. When that happens, I think everyone gets triggered, but in different ways and in different places and to different places inside your own history. So I know that there's a part of me right now that is moving from a place of trigger, right? That I'm like, I'm someone who lived through 9/11. I watched what my country did afterwards. Yep. I can't live with it. I have to live with it. And so, you know, all the time, I'm like, the most loving thing I feel like you can ever do for people is help them to stop being a part of any machinery of harm. Mm-hmm. That's the most loving thing you can do for other people. When I look to police, when I look to the military, you know, I'm always looking for those people who are like, I was in there and I realized how much it hurt my soul and I got out. And I'm like, I believe you. I believe that it hurts the soul to do that. And I believe we all have to get out of that. Right. Yeah. So,
well, thank you for doing that work. I feel like personally blessed by the fact that you're doing that in the world.
Well, I feel personally blessed by the fact that you are doing what you're doing in the world, that you're writing for us, that you're imagining, that you are so coherent in the realm of dreams. And I'm going to read one of my recent poems. I usually read from Fables and Spells, and because I'm on the road, I don't have it with me. So I thought I would read this other poem that feels current and feels like it's related to us. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you, and this might be like, you let me know what comes, but if you were speaking from that other realm for a moment, right? If you were like the wisdom that the other realm wants us to hear, the pattern of wisdom that the other realm wants us to hear, is there something that comes forth that's like, this is the essence, this is the thing?
You mean today, right now?
Right now, today, in this moment.
Well, last night I dreamed several dreams of the world burning. The world that I was in was burning. Everything had burned down. Everything was wrecked and ruined, and I was still alive. It was a devastating feeling, but I treasure that I had that dream because it enhances my empathy for what people in other parts of the world are feeling right now. So the dreams don't necessarily give you the answers. Sometimes they give you experiences that help build your love and your empathy. And I don't think we ever reach the end of building our love and empathy. I've done a lot of work on that, but I'm not done. I'm still going in that direction. And so the dream was a gift in that sense, even though it was very painful.
Thank you. Thanks for letting us know and feel that. I know, like I've been having dreams like this as well, waking up from the collective experience too. So the poem that I'm going to read to you is called "The Border is the Wound." And this came on the 21st of October. It says, "I will not let my heart shrink to the size of my oppressors. I will stay soft. I will pray with dignity for the absolute freedom of all humans from hatred and the myth of separation. I will dance pure love upon the moon, so far from my oppressor that I can return with her heart. Here is how I practice. In war, I keep the dead unsegregated, dreaming together their spirits who know what flesh cannot. I shake off monoliths. I ask right now, who are the prisoners and who are their guards? I do not let those at peace with oppression tell me I am heartless. I do not perform my grief. I weep freely at the altar. I pray up their names. I critique abroad what I critique at home. I know every aspect of my freedom is unexpected here, still precarious. I see all the humanity, the mistakes, the narrow, sharp lives left in the wake of trauma. I know my country well. We always think our motives invisible. We are always naked. In my hands are 1,000 rivers. Pain, confusion, misinformation, fury. But the eyes of those children watch me. I start at the freshest cut, As the earth whispers, the border is the wound.
Beautiful. It just feels like a spell for me that you just uttered. It was a poem, but it was also a magic spell.
It's a spell. I think I only write spells. I think they like sneak under the hood of a poem. But I think they're all spells, actually. Rob, it's been just a total blessing to my life to get to sit and be with you and
Same
talk with
here.
you in this time. And I know I could talk to you for a long time, so I hope our paths cross in other ways, you know.
Me too.
Shake these bones, shake these bones, oh God, shake these bones.
Hi.
Shake these bones, oh God.
I miss you. Shake these bones, shake these bones. It's Autumn again. Thanks for listening to our show. You can make a sustaining donation to our work by visiting our page at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. You can also find us on Instagram at endoftheworldpc. How to Survive the End of the World is produced and edited by the incomparable Zach Rosen. Music for our show comes from Tunde Olaniran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bengtsons. Talk to you soon.
Tackle myself to ground. You know I gotta shake these bones, shake these.